Other things I have eaten that were meant for industrial use. Pop-Tarts. Tab. Mom's meatloaf. Tang. Spam. Hostess pink snowballs. Stuff inside wax lips. Airplane breakfast sausage. I've thought about just moving to California, becoming a vegetarian. No, wait. Not California. Talk about a place with ecological mayhem afoot everywhere you turn. If the Golden State isn't being hit with earthquakes, it's being burned to the ground by uncontrollable wildfires. Whatever the fires don't destroy, the mudslides finish off. If the state isn't experiencing a major drought, then it's being hit with La Niña, El Niño, or El Loco. The West Coast is a crazy place to drop a bunch of humans. I'm convinced that nature never intended for our species to settle there. It just isn't constructed ecologically for our survival. No matter how much sod you lay down over desert sand, or how much water you pump from the Colorado River 1,000 miles away, you can't fool Mother Nature. And when you try, Mother Nature gets really shit-faced. The Indians figured this out early. Some scientists say there was more pollution in the Los Angeles basin when tens of thousands of Indians and their campfires were there than there is now with 8 million cars on its freeways. The Indians couldn't stand the way their smoke just hung in the air, trapped by the mountains. And when the earth moved and split apart, they got the message and got the hell out. But not us. California is our dream. 34 million people, one-eighth of our population, are crammed along a strip of land between a mountain range and an ocean. This means manna to the energy companies, 34 million suckers to take advantage of. Welcome, Rolling Blackouts. Back in the good old days, California's electricity was supplied by regional monopolies whose rates were set by the state legislature. Then, in the mid-1990s, deregulation was touted as a way for the companies to escape the high costs they'd incurred by building nuclear power plants, and as a way to make much more money. One of the most vocal advocates for deregulation was Enron, a major contributor to the Republican Party, and George W. Bush in particular. Deregulation went into effect in 1996, thanks to a piece of legislation that took a whopping 3 weeks to pass and included a $20 billion bailout payment to the California utilities, most of which was used to cover their bad investment decisions of the past. For 4 years, prices were frozen at above-average levels, but so was competition, which is supposed to increase in a deregulated market. There was a block in effect against new power plant construction, so Californians grew more dependent on out-of-state independent providers for their power. Thus, on and off for the past year, power has been bought on the daily spot market at outrageously inflated prices. Today, utility customers not only pay more, they're forced to go through certain parts of the day without electricity. But it's not because there isn't enough power. The independent system operator, the California agency that oversees the transmission of electricity, has access to about 45,000 megawatts of power, the amount needed for summertime peak demand. The power companies are holding back as much as 13,000 megawatts of this power by going offline, for reasons they don't have to divulge. The Wall Street Journal reported in August of 2000 that 461% more capacity was offline than in the previous year. And of course, tighter supply means higher prices. But this is not the case in those cities served by community-owned utilities. People in Los Angeles and other areas where the public still owns the energy have not experienced blackouts. Other states in the Southwest and Pacific Northwest have sufficient supplies of energy to have bailed much of California out of this recent crisis by providing almost 25% of its power. While all of this Hollywood drama has been going on, Junior and Uncle Dick have been seizing the moment to scare up public support to build more nuclear plants, burn more coal, drill for more oil. In other words, they want to make bad matters worse. Meanwhile, Bush has built a new home on his Texas ranch that is an environmentalist dream. It is fueled by solar energy, and its wastewater is recycled. And Cheney's vice presidential residence is equipped with state-of-the-art energy conservation devices that were installed by the president in exile, Al Gore. Clean, renewable energy is okay for them, but the rest of us get the message loud and clear. Let them drive minivans. Let them eat beef. George W.'s Ecologically Correct Texas Ranch. President Bush may not care about the rest of the environment, but his new Crawford, Texas ranch is shockingly ecologically correct. The house features geothermal heating and cooling systems that use 25% of the electricity of traditional mechanisms. Water at a constant 67 degrees, piped up from a source 300 feet below ground and through the house for cooling in the summer and heating in the winter. The same system heats the swimming pool. A 25,000-gallon cistern that collects house wastewater and rainwater for reuse in irrigating the gardens. Its own water purification system, which uses recycled household water to help restore native wildflowers and grasses on the property. Chapter 7, The End of Men. Earlier this year, my wife and I attended the baptism of our new nephew, Anthony. Our teenage daughter had been asked to be his godmother, a job that would require her to be there for little Anthony, should he need to be burped or raised Catholic, or both. The baptism ceremony, we discovered, has changed a lot in the Catholic Church. Instead of just hurry up and pour a little water on his forehead before we lose his soul to Satan, the Church now makes it a joyful event during Sunday Mass. About halfway through the service, Father Andy asked the entire extended family to gather round the big baptismal font while little Anthony Proffer was submerged in the holy water and then wrapped in a pure white garment. The priest then held Anthony up for all the congregation to see, and everyone in the church applauded enthusiastically. No one was applauding louder than me. For this was the first time in 13 years a boy had been born into our family. 13 babies in 13 years in our family. That's 11 girls and 2 boys. Now, I think most of us would agree that having a girl is, well, a little less work. Not that we love boys any less, and with a strong health insurance plan that covers broken arms, teeth, and collarbones, with additional coverage for fingers caught in car doors, and personal injury claims from neighbors who allege our dear sweet little boy torched their Celica just to see how fast Toyota paint burns, they're no more difficult to raise than girls. I have lived my entire life in households where men were decidedly in the minority. I have no brothers, but 2 wonderful sisters. Between them and our mother, they made sure I did all the woman's work in the house, while my dad was granted occasional leave to watch a Sunday golf tournament. I tried to even things out a bit, claiming I deserved more of a say because I was the oldest. But that only galvanized my sister's childhood feminist majority. To this day, as testimony to their assertive behavior, those who meet us when we're together are convinced that my sisters are older than I am and that I'm the baby of the family. I now live with my wife and my daughter, outnumbered again. Whatever frightening male habits were not exercised by my sisters and mother, these two have been merciless in finishing off. The latest was breaking me of spitting toothpaste all over the bathroom mirror while brushing my teeth. That one only took 19 years. They tell me the list is now down to a single page, with only 3 or 4 appalling behaviors left to annihilate. Balancing my big gulp in the open space on the steering wheel while driving, leaving permanent ink stains on the arm of the chair I fall asleep in, snoring, though I fear this one may ultimately only be corrected by a pillow being accidentally slipped over my face and mysteriously held there tightly for a good 3 to 5 minutes. Truth be told, I'm a better person for having lived my life surrounded by strong, intelligent, and loving women. It just would have been nice to play catch. Once. My parents have no grandsons. My sisters and I have only daughters. My wife's parents had 4 daughters and only 2 boys. They, in turn, produced 8 more girls and only 2 additional boys. My wife's 2 brothers and I have only girls. Our family hasn't seen a game of tackle football or mummily peg since high school. This sacrifice appears to have gone unnoticed by nearly everyone involved. I offer this little glimpse into the gender makeup of my family to point out a much larger discovery I've made. Pondering this lopsided ratio, I began asking around to find out if other people were experiencing the same thing, more girl babies being born than boy babies. Much to my surprise, I was not alone. Lately, when I'm asked to speak at a university or community group, I leave the prepared agenda for a moment to ask how many in the room are seeing more girls being born in their families than boys. Scores of hands always shoot up. Countless people began sharing their secret with me, that the ranks of boys are dwindling. In some families, it seems they're altogether extinct. I always reassure them that there's no need to feel any shame in their inability to produce male offspring. Then it hit me. Something is up. And sure enough, something is. The Census Bureau confirms that the number of male babies being born has been declining every year in the United States since 1990. Plus, women are living longer and longer, 80 years on average, versus only 74.2 for men. When I was a kid, the country seemed pretty much 50-50 male-female, with women maybe holding a slight lead. Then the ratio went to 51-49, with women in the majority. Soon it'll be 52-48. So, I've come to one ugly but irrefutable conclusion. Guys, nature is trying to kill us off. Why is Mother Nature doing this? Are we not the carriers of the seed of life? What have we men done to deserve this? As it turns out, plenty. In the early years of man, we served a critical and necessary function in the growth of the species. We hunted and gathered the food, protected the women and children from larger animals conspiring to eat them, and helped the number of Homo sapiens multiply rapidly through a lot of random, unrestricted sex. It's been downhill for us ever since. In the past few centuries, things seem to have taken a fatal turn for our gender. As is our wont, we commenced work on a series of projects that stunk everything up and made a mess of our world. Women, they deserved none of the blame. They continued to bring life into this world. We continued to destroy it whenever we could. How many women have come up with the idea of exterminating a whole race of people? None that I've ever met at the gym. How many women have spilled oil in the oceans, dumped toxins in our food supply, or insisted that the new SUV designs had to be bigger, bigger, bigger? Let me see. Of the 816 species that have gone extinct since Columbus got lost and landed here, another man who wouldn't ask for directions, most of which are necessary links in our fragile ecosystem, how many do you think were eradicated by women? Once again, I think we all know the answer. If you were nature, how would you respond to such a brutal assault? And what would you do if you noticed that it was one particular gender of humans that was going out of its way to destroy you? Well, Mother Nature has a habit of cutting to the chase. She'd defend herself by any means necessary. That's what she'd do. She'd pull out every stop to save her life, to survive at all costs, even if it meant eliminating one half of the very thing that was supposed to keep her most advanced species going. Yes, nature has graciously granted our species the highest form of intelligence and entrusted us with her future. But suddenly, it looked like one of the genders had decided to throw the kegger of all keggers on Mother Earth's watch. Now, hungover and cranky, Mother is pissed at whoever slipped the Mickey in her drink. The culprit has a receding hairline, a pot belly, and never screws the cap back onto anything. Yep, guys, we've been fingered. There's no way to hide from nature's wrath. We can't pin any of this on the women. It wasn't a woman who dropped napalm bombs, or who invented plastic, or who said, "Damn it, what we need is a beer can with a pop top." Unfortunately, every bit of plunder and pillage, every attack on the environment, everything that has brought horror and destruction to all that was once pure and good, has come from hands that, well, when they weren't busy bringing pleasure to oneself, are working overtime to wipe out this beautiful, wonderful home we were given free of charge. No security deposit required, no background check needed. No wonder nature is getting rid of us. If we men had any sense, we'd try to get nature to forgive us by cleaning up our act. You know, do the obvious stuff. Quit desecrating the Arctic wilderness, pick up after ourselves, stop throwing whopper remains out the car window. Nature would probably put up with a lot of our guff if we still served some important purpose. For eons, we had two things women didn't have that made us a necessity. One, we provided the sperm to keep the species going, and two, we were able to reach and get whatever they needed off the top shelf. Unfortunately for us, some traitor guy invented in vitro fertilization, which means that now females only need the sperm from a few of us in order to have babies. In fact, someone, probably a woman, in Arizona, has announced that science has found a means of human reproduction that doesn't even require sperm to fertilize an egg. Now they can do it with DNA. No longer do women have to crawl out from underneath some slobbering man with his face buried in a pillow simply because they wish to have babies. All they need now is a test tube. How to trick nature into making more men? A company in Virginia has developed a method that allows you to choose the gender of your baby. The Genetic and IVF In Vitro Fertilization Institute, an infertility clinic in Fairfax, Virginia, uses a process that separates the male chromosome from the female chromosome sperm, allowing parents to determine the sex of their baby before it is conceived. Be extra nice to your wife before going to this clinic, because ultimately it's her right to decide what is placed inside her body. And give those people in Virginia more federal funds. Keep your sperm strong. Quit violating yourself on a daily basis. It weakens the sperm and lessens their numbers. Before sex, think manly thoughts. Go over the instant replay one more time in your head. You would never have let that ball roll between your legs in Game 6 of the 86 World Series. Hear the crowd at Shea roar as you scoop up the ball and throw Ray Knight out. You did it. You the man. Conceive your children earlier in life. A recent epidemiological study concluded that older parents are more likely to have girls than boys. The other invention that did the male population in was the stepladder. The portable, easy-to-carry aluminum stepladder, to be precise. Who was the bastard that came up with that bright idea? Now, what possible excuse can we have for sticking around? Nature has a way of getting rid of its weakest links, those that no longer serve a useful purpose, the dead weight. That, my friends, is us. Reproductive science and three little aluminum steps rising above the Earth's surface have made us guys about as useful as an 8-track tape. Other things already rendered useless by nature. Typewriters, the Washington Senators, Bosco, walking, Scorts, the busy signal, bank tellers, a college degree, Malto meal, hair on a man's back, AYD's weight loss candies, the Supreme Court. Well, look at the bright side. We've had one hell of a run. Thousands of years of total domination over the social order and still going strong. Think about it. There has not been a single day when we weren't in charge, when we weren't calling the shots and running the world. Not even the Yankees can claim such an unbroken reign of unchallenged power. I mean, here we are, the minority. And yet we men have ruled over the female majority since time immemorial. In other countries, we call that apartheid. In America, we call it normal. Since the birth of this country, for more than 225 years, we have seen to it that not a single woman has held either the number one or number two offices in the land. For the better part of that time, we've made sure that damn few of them have held any office at all. In fact, for the first 130 years of presidential elections, it was illegal for women even to vote. Then in 1920, just to show women were good sports, we gave them the right to vote. And guess what? We remained in power. Go figure. Suddenly women had more votes. They could have thrown our collective male ass into the political trash heap. But what did they do? They voted for us. How cool is that? Have you ever heard of any group of oppressed people that suddenly by their sheer numbers takes charge and then votes in overwhelming numbers to keep their oppressors in power? The blacks of South Africa, once free, did not continue apartheid by voting for whites. I know no Jews in America who voted for George Wallace or David Duke or Pat Buchanan, Florida Debacle included. No, the usual thing a sane society does is give the boot to the boot that's been on its neck for umpteen years. Yet more than 80 years after they gained the right to vote, and despite the growth of a massive women's movement, here's where we stand. Not a single woman has been on the ballot of the major parties for president or vice president in 20 of the 21 national elections since 1920. Currently, there are only 5 women governors in 50 states. Women hold only 13% of the seats in Congress. 496 of the top 500 companies in America are run by men. Just 4 of the top 21 universities in the United States are run by women. 40% of all women who are divorced between the ages of 25 and 34 end up in poverty, compared with only 8% of married women who live below the poverty line. Women's earnings average 76 cents for every $1 earned by men, resulting in a lifetime loss of over $650,133. To make the same annual salary as her male counterpart, a woman would have to work the entire year, plus an additional 4 months. Mike's fantasy list of women presidents. President Cynthia McKinney, the best person in Congress today. President Hillary Clinton, only if I could get invited for sleepovers. President Oprah, the fireside chats with Dr. Phil would save us all. President Katrina Vandenheuvel, editor of The Nation, a perfect candidate for president of the nation. President Sherry Lansing, she runs Paramount Pictures. She put me in a picture. Enough said. President Karen Duffy, correspondent for TV Nation, would run circles around any foreign leader who dared to challenge her. President Carolyn Kennedy, just because it would be right. President Bella Abzug, even dead, she'd do better than Junior. President Lee Taylor Young, the first naked woman I ever saw in the movie The Big Bounce, also starring Ryan O'Neill. You see, there were like 6 of us guys, all 16 years old, and we had snuck into the South Door drive-in and... Oh, never mind. Sooner or later, women are going to figure out how to seize power, and when that happens, let's pray for mercy. After all, they are the stronger gender. Contrary to popular myth, it is men who are the weaker sex. Consider the evidence. We don't live as long as women. Our brains are less well-formed and shrink at a faster rate than women's as we age. Proportionately, we are more likely than women to suffer from catastrophic illnesses such as heart disease, strokes, ulcers, and liver failure. Men are more likely to carry sexually transmitted diseases, which they pass on to their unsuspecting wives and girlfriends. Men's major body systems are circulatory, respiratory, digestive, and excretory functions, are all likely to break down long before women's. Though I guess the breakdown of the excretory system was no surprise, considering the case of air freshener you've got under the bathroom sink. Our only reproductive system, the ability to produce sperm, lasts longer than a woman's ability to produce eggs. But our delivery system peters out years before a woman discovers the benefits of enjoying a warm bath and a good novel. Men are unable to give birth to keep the species going. Men lose their hair. Men lose their minds. We're 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than women. Men are 3 times more likely to die in an accident than women. Men are just not as smart as women. Girls generally score higher than boys on the elementary school tests. And face it, we don't get any smarter with age. Perhaps there's no logical explanation for this disparity. Maybe, as the nuns taught us, it's just all part of God's plan. But if that's the case, why did God make women so much better? The nuns must have had the inside dope on this. After all, they were all women themselves, They knew God's secret, and they certainly weren't going to share it with the likes of me. It is my belief, and this is purely from my personal observation of the woman I live with, that when God was creating the world, he spent the better part of day six creating what women would look like. I mean, you can't help but notice the skillful craft of an artisan at the top of his field. The shapes, the curves, the symmetry, all constitute extraordinary art. Their skin is soft and smooth and perfect. Their hair is rich and thick and vibrant. I'm not speaking from a prurient perspective here. These are simply the conclusions of the art critic in me. Women, I think we all agree, are stunningly beautiful. So what happened to God when it came to us? It's like he used up all his best tricks inventing women. By the time he got to us, he was obviously ready to get it over with, move on to something more important, like that seventh day of rest. So, men ended up like Chevys, rushed off the assembly line and guaranteed to break down after limited use. That's why we try to stay in our Naga hide recliners as long as we can. The exertion required to pick up after ourselves can lead to an early coronary. Our bodies were built to lift, carry, haul, and throw, but for a limited time only. And I have to say it, what's with this extra thing we were given? Well, let me put this as delicately as possible. In God's rush to finish up, it looks like he just grabbed a stray part he had laying around the shop and stuck it on us, because it sure as hell don't look right. If you took an item like this and glued it on a lamppost or a tree, you'd say, nah, I don't think so. But nobody questions its presence on a guy. Like a creature from Alien, reupholstered by Frank Perdue, the male organ is testimony to the fact that every now and again, as with the floods in Bangladesh or the teeth of the British, God just fails to get it right. Saddled with the odds against us, some men have simply gone insane and taken to fighting back any way they can. If nature is going to favor women, they figure, then they must take matters into their own hands. Their attitude, if we can't beat them, let's beat them. These days, the tendency of men to injure, maim, or murder women is seen by most as politically incorrect, and laws have been strengthened to protect women from us. But as we know, laws are only made to exact punishment after a crime has been committed. Few laws have stopped those men who are intent on wreaking their vengeance on women. Women know all too well that 9/11 is only there to notify the police that they'd better bring a body bag and some strong cleanser to mop up the mess, because by the time they get there, that restraining order the court issued to keep him away will be stuffed in her mouth, and rigor mortis will be setting in nicely, thank you. Men gifted with more subtlety often resort to other means than outright murder to even the score between men and women. For instance, the tobacco companies, all run by men, have been extremely successful in convincing women to smoke at a time when the number of male smokers is declining. Thanks to all this new female smoking, lung cancer has now surpassed breast cancer as the leading cancer killer of women. Total number of women eliminated each year by smoking, 165,000. Denial of treatment is another trick men employ in paring down the female population. If you need an organ transplant to stay alive, you're 86% more likely to get it if you are a man. Men suffering from heart disease are 115% more likely to undergo a heart bypass than women with the same condition. And if you're a woman, you're more likely to pay higher insurance premiums than men for this shoddy care. Of course, when all else fails, you can also go back to murder. It usually works. A woman is 5 times more likely to be killed by a husband or boyfriend than a man is likely to be murdered by his wife or girlfriend. Keep that up, and we might just make it after all. How men can avoid extinction. As bad as the future looks for us, there is some hope that we, as men, can delay our demise if we learn to adopt some very important new behaviors. There are many things we can learn from women and how they function sanely. Here are a few. 1. Remember that your car is not a weapon of mass destruction. Stop getting pissed off at that car that just cut you off. Why do you really care? You're going to get home in the same amount of time anyway, so some jerk cost you 4 seconds on the road? Big deal, get a grip. Women couldn't care less about stuff like this, and they live longer for it.